beautiful sense of peace and freedom inside. It's not that hard to do when you don't know how to do it. That was said on purpose. When you know how to do things, that becomes a problem. That that is when you follow all the instructions which you get from somebody else instead of feeling it in your own heart and mind and getting to know how this works. So even recently, the last gig which I did was in a little conference over in Melbourne, where we invited a couple of mindfulness experts from the universities, really good ones, who are breaking new grounds into just how the mindfulness practices and traditional Buddhist practices, how they can come together and how they can learn much more from one another. And this is, you know, one of those parts of our world which are sort of growing and growing and helping a lot of people, but it could be doing better. This is why in such an organization as the behavioral sciences is one of the reasons why mindfulness practices have come up, but how can we make this even more powerful? And the question I was asked is sometimes it sounds so easy just to let go of your past and not worry about your future. Sounds easy, doesn't it? But there are some people who have gone through some very bad trauma. People who have had some very great difficulties which, when they try and let it go, they feel that it's suppressing it, pushing it under a big heavy rock where it will eventually come back and grow and bite you. So in the future, the anxieties and uncertainties in our life, are we being a bit stupid and just wishful thinking to think that this world is not in a point of crisis? And so are you, and everything's going to go wrong, and So this is our world. When people ask, just let go, they say, we can't, just let go. No! And respect the people. That to be able to even let go of past and future, to become mindful of what's happening, it takes some skill. And one of the interesting things about being sort of a monk is you do live outside of the box. Like many other ghosts, they live outside the boxes. I'm not a ghost. But, please excuse me, I cannot resist a good joke when one comes up. But this is actually true. When I was, because part of my job is, you know, doing funerals and stuff, and when I was doing a funeral service, it was a Chinese-born gentleman, and the burial was a long way from where everyone gathered together, so we had to do a walking procession. It was a long walk. I knew it was a long walk. I've done that many times. So I had the opportunity to ask the funeral director, sort of, you know, just have a chat, and ask her, well, so you're in the funeral business. How long have you been in the funeral business? And she said, oh, many, many, many years. She's going to retire next year. I said, oh, great. Tell me your best ghost stories. Because who would know best than actually a funeral director who deals with dead people every day? And she said, do you ever see any of the dead people? Because, you know, the ghosts. I said, oh, yeah, every day. Oh, really? Yeah, come on, tell me how. So she was saying that in the, you know, when she had to work late filling out all the forms, or waiting for a person to come into a service in the evening, which is the only time when they were working they could go. She had to stay late in the funeral parlor. And quite often she'd leave the door of her office open, and she would see the corpses, the dead people, walking past her door. And you think that's, no, she was, said, really, yeah, yeah, you saw the ghost walk past. What did you do? And she said, I scolded them. Get back in your box. You're not allowed out here. And she wasn't joking with me. I said, that's the truth. I said, yes, can I use that story? Oh, of course. But just the way she said it, she's not at all afraid. You know, just if somebody was wandering out and they're going in the wrong place, you get back to where you belong. And she said, you know, you belong in your box. Go back in your box. But anyhow, I don't know where I got that from. But anyway, that when I'm thinking outside the box, that's why. Because sometimes to be able to have some peace in your life, especially have some peaceful moments in your meditation, how can we do that when we've got history and fears for the future? And of course, a lot of time when people say, oh, just let go, that's not enough. So come and put some more effort in, let it go. That's not enough. So one of the important spiritual, psychological techniques is to be kind to your past. Give it some love, some openness. Sometimes that's an aspect of attitude, a reaction which people don't expect. What do you mean to be kind to my past? If you knew what I've been through, no one could be kind to that. Of course you can. By kindness to your past, you look back on some of those events. They may not have been the very best, but you have this beautiful sense of openness towards them, even love towards them, even in a way that you can love sort of a child. And even if that child does terrible things and goes to prison, you can still love them. That's your kid. You may have like a cat or a dog. Sometimes your love is so unconditional. Sometimes you don't know why they have to do those things, or why they did those things, or why it hurt you so much. But you're kind. It may be someone, for example, recently we had a break-in at our main meditation hall over in Perth. This is not a joke, this is a true story. And a person just came in the middle of the night, we don't know when, and used a crowbar to open up the donation box. But we knew from experience there was hardly anything in there, maybe $10 or some coins. So I felt really sad for that burglar. Imagine having to get up right in the middle of the night, creeping in, risking everything. It must have been so tense. And when he got there, he managed to open up the box and find it's only $10. In Australia, that's below the minimum wage. So he must have gone, or she must have gone home, or whatever it was, very disappointed. And I think, aw, that's so sad. I felt compassion for the poor thief. I think next time we should leave a little bit more in there for him to make it worth his while when he comes. So instead of being miserable and upset about the past, you can always be kind towards it somewhere. It means you don't accept it as something which is wonderful, but at least you can find some reason, some excuse, some argument to forgive, understand. And then when you let go, so when you are kind to some of the pain of your past, you find it gets softer. When it gets softer, it's easier to be absorbed and to vanish, to evaporate and go. And it's the same, it's not what other people did to you, it's what you have done as well. Can you be kind to that? You are learning, you make mistakes, as we all make our mistakes in life. But you can be kind to our mistakes. When you are kind to them, instead of getting angry at them, trying to pretend they don't exist, trying to seek for revenge, your mind literally becomes hard. And by the mind, I mean your past becomes so hard and solid. It's difficult to let it go. And your future becomes so hard and tight. Again, it can't be let go of. So before we let go of past and future, be kind to it. When you have that kindness towards the past and future, it's like you have made a mistake and your best friend, your partner, forgives you. They're kind to you. Does that mean you're going to make the mistake more often? No. When you have the kindness, the softness, this beautiful human emotion of understanding and being kind, we all make mistakes. Then you find it's easy, having softened the past, to let it go. And as for the future, who knows what might happen next? Certainly I have no idea. I never, ever, ever, ever thought I'd be sitting in this chair giving a talk to people in Hong Kong, Center of Behavioral Health, with lots of books outside, some of which I don't understand what they mean because they're in a language in Chinese. Isn't it the case that your life is a series of unexpected, unplanned events? And so what you expect is going to happen never does happen. Which is wonderful when we can be kind to the future. Kind to the future means we soften it. Yeah, it may happen, it may not happen. Either way, it's going to work somehow or other. Remember what you asked me earlier, what was likely with Ajahn Chah? He was so wise, and sometimes it was compassion I never really understood. Like whenever I was sick, especially really sick, he'd come to my bed when I was in the middle of a typhus fever for about 5 or 6 weeks and say, I will either die or I'll get better, so no need to worry about anything. You don't understand it, but the pain doesn't last. And the chances are that you won't die. So being kind to your future is actually seeing a positive side of that future. I don't know, last year did I mention to you the discovery which was the best blood group? Have you seen that research? The best blood group, all the 5 major blood groups, should be obvious to you. It's B positive. Okay, it's a joke. Is this supposed to be translated, by the way? This talk, I've forgotten. Is it? No. Okay, good. So, be... So when you're kind to the future, what's happening is you're allowing more positive results of the future to come forth. When you're negative to the future, all the things which are going to go wrong, they're more likely to go wrong. So being kind to the future, being kind to the past, softens the past and the future. You don't have so much to worry about, so much baggage to carry around with you, that it's easier to be peaceful. It's easier to be here. It's easier to take a rest, to take a break. There was a gentleman who got a job in a forestry. They gave him a chainsaw. And the first day he managed to cut down lots of timber. The second day, he didn't cut down so much, maybe about half of what he cut down the first day. The third day, only about a quarter of what he cut down the first day. His productivity was going down, even though he was working longer hours. And the boss came and said, "What's up? You know, you're such a good forester at first." And then the boss noticed, "Hey, look at the chain of your chainsaw. It's so blunt." He said, "Yes, but I haven't got time to sharpen it I have to work so hard just keeping up with it, the quotas. So I don't take time off to have lunch or even to sharpen my chainsaw. What a stupid forester that is. To take 5 minutes off to sharpen your chainsaw would mean your productivity goes up. You can't cut any timber with a blunt saw. No more than you can be a lecturer, a professor, if you've got a dull mind. You can't be a mother, a father, a partner, if you don't know how to sharpen up your chain every now and again, to take that time off. So this is where we learn just how important it is. It's not wasting time, but creating time, so that we can be far sharper, far more effective. So, now before we do our first little meditation, I don't know how many of you have done meditate. How many of you have meditated before in this life? Like a lot of you. How many have never meditated before in your life before? Okay. You will find that probably you have, but you never called it meditation. Sometimes it's just learning how to be peaceful, learning how to be here, relaxed, and taking time out. So anyway, any questions anyone has about the meditation now, because sometimes it's a waste of time asking those questions afterwards. Usually read the instructions manual before you plug in your microwave or computer. You don't wait for it to go bang before you read the instructions. So has anyone got any questions at all about just the learning, just how to let go and be mindful? As things pop up, first of all, don't try and suppress them. Don't try and get rid of them. Don't try and think, no, not the right time now. If they come up, just let them come up. If you feel comfortable of being with them, and then be kind to them. You know, kindness. Nothing bites you if you're kind. You've been with like venomous snakes, and they just go past you, crawl over you, and never bite you, or if you are kind to them. So often in life you've seen that. Fear, of course, makes the other partner afraid. Imagine your kindness to the snakes of the past, which always come in to bite you. But instead of biting you, they're now like your friends. And of course, they'll never bite you if they're friends. You know them, they know you, and you learn how to live together. The kindness is best like opening the door of your heart with respect to the past. Respecting, you know, your role in that past. Not criticizing, not blaming, but just respecting. That sort of attitude you can find does a marvelous thing with the past. It gets soft, loose, and then it falls off the radar. You've dealt with it. You've dealt with you as well. Thank you for that question. Another question before we begin? Okay. So there'll be many questions afterwards. So, Venus, half an hour, is that okay? 20 minutes? Where's she gone? How long should we meditate? Oh, there you are. Half an hour, 20 minutes? 10 minutes? 2 hours? 2 hours, okay, 2 hours. Twenty minutes it is. Okay, so you can, those of you who like to sit on the floor, you can sit on the floor if you wish. I'm going to sit on the floor today. Of course, you know, sometimes people just don't need cushions. I travel around with my own cushion. Called fat. We don't have to sit on the floor. That on a chair is fine too. So wherever you can feel comfortable for 20 minutes. That's okay. Okay, yeah, can have them. Okay, who wants a cushion? Cushions. Holy cushions. One over here somewhere. One over here somewhere. Holy cushions. Okay, people are right. Okay. Okay, so closing your eyes. If you don't feel like closing your eyes, you want to keep them open, that's fine. But usually you find you can become more centered with your eyes closed. But if you feel at any time during the meditation at home or anywhere in the world which you want to meditate, if you don't feel safe, it's a good idea to keep the eyes open. It just gives you a little bit of idea of that nothing can harm you. With your eyes closed, or with them open, get yourself as comfortable as you can. And once the body is comfortable, now we try and just allow our mind to be in our present moment. And to do that, we're going to do the little mind exercise of two heavy shopping bags. So you've been shopping before. For those who don't go shopping, sometimes we're going to the airport carrying heavy suitcases. But imagine you're carrying two heavy shopping bags. One in the left hand has the letters PAST, the past. We're not on the outside. One on the right hand has the letters FUTURE on the outside, future. And imagine just how heavy those shopping bags can be. Imagine how they make your arms ache and your shoulders hurt. They're very heavy. The shopping bags in the left hand, that represents, it's a simile for your past. All of the many things which you carry around with you, which you try to escape from. All of those things in the past, and it is noteworthy why many of the things you pack in the bag of your past and which you feel that you should keep carrying around are the failures, the mistakes, the pain, the disappointments, the misunderstandings of life. All that thing which happened a long time ago, or even just a few moments ago, all keeping on piling into that shopping bag of your left hand called the past. And the shopping bag in the right hand represents the future. All the fears, anxieties, some dreams and hopes as well. But sometimes even the hopes get buried amongst all the negative anxieties, expectations, fears. But you have those two heavy shopping bags there. One representing the past, one representing the future. And they are hard. And you imagine, you even visualize, like a fantasy or a dream. You imagine leaning to your left and lowering the shopping bag in your left hand, representing the past, closer and closer to the ground. And when it meets the floor, the weight, the burden, the heaviness of that shopping bag in your left hand totally vanishes. The floor is now supporting it. And you now allow your left hand to rise, straighten your back, and your left hand and arm is resting by your side, at peace, re-energizing. You've let go of the past by just putting it down kindly, softly, gently, putting it on the floor to take the weight for a while. And then you still have the shopping bag in your right hand, representing the future, with all of the fears, anxieties and plans, all the thoughts of what might go wrong. Imagine lowering that to the ground, and as it goes closer and closer to the floor, the weight, when it meets the floor, the weight vanishes. It's no longer hard to hold there, it's just the floor's holding it. It hasn't vanished. It's just you put it down for a while. And as the right arm just rises to the side, where it too can rest and relax and recuperate, it's like letting go of your future, your fears and anxiety and past. Putting them down for a while. Allowing you to relax, rest, recuperate. And you also, in your visual exercise, you imagine those two bags standing on the floor, containing all your past and future, fears and anxieties, bad memories, happy memories. And you're standing in this wonderful place between the two, called the present moment. Now, you're not throwing those past and future away. You're just putting them down for a little while. You'll pick them up again afterwards if you wish. But right now, we need to take a break. We're standing in this place called the present moment, right between the past and the future. The only place we can really rest and relax and re-energize. And if you feel like you still need to pick out something from the bag of the past or worry about something in the future, please give it kindness. What you thought it was probably wasn't as bad as you remembered it to be. What you think is going to happen, maybe it won't ever happen like that. Put it away for a while to give you some relaxation and energy, being in this moment. And in this moment, how do you feel now? All that worry about the past and thinking about the future has tired you out. It's caused you stress. Just like a guitar string being pulled into the future, being drawn back into the past, becomes very tight, which means something strikes it and makes a big sound. It's got no resilience. Small things create big noises. But by letting go of the past, letting go of the future, you're loose, free. The tightness in your mind and in your body relaxes. Any time a fear of the future comes up, give it kindness, gentleness. If the future, just carrying on the metaphor, if you scare the future scares you. Gets tight and angry, just like the past. Be kind. Smile at the past. Smile at all the actors who played their roles in your past so far. Can't understand why, but give them the benefit of the doubt. Kindness, compassion. And how do you feel in this moment, in your body and in your heart? See if you can soften this moment as much as you can. Not forcing this moment, but just being in this moment. A part of being kind to the past is whatever's happened to you, why? Don't even think about the why. We learn so much from the present moment, not from our past. Sometimes the whys will ever, forever be beyond your reach. You do have a choice when you're kind to all the perpetrators of your life story so far. Only then can you find it easy to let it go, let it pass. And kindness to the future means you're encouraging the very best for the future. Is the mind what it expects? What it hopes for? What it dreams for? Dream for something positive. It's more likely to happen. You water flowers, never weeds. Just to know how your body feels, how your mind feels. What do I mean by your mind? You can imagine, just like we have thermometers and speedometers, we also have inside of us what I call the peace-ometer, by which you can know how peaceful you are or how agitated. And because this is your own personal assessment, no one can hack into it. There's no way that how peaceful or how agitated can ever be known by another. So But just be honest with yourself. How peaceful are you right now? And once you have some mindfulness, some awareness of the peace-ometer, you can even give it a number from 1 to 10. 1 is really peaceful, 10 is very agitated. See what happens. See how that needle can get less and less and less, from 5 to 4 to 3 to 2. What is necessary to find peace inside your mind? And what disturbs your mind? What moves the needle of the peaceometer closer to 0? What moves the needle closer to 10? Meditation, mindfulness, peace. It's not an intellectual journey, it's an emotional journey, a feeling, getting to understand the language of your inner world, what makes it peaceful, what agitates you. Usually something to do with the past or the future, which agitates and destroys your peace. So what makes you more peaceful? Please don't open your eyes yet. Just check your body. How comfortable is it? How relaxed is it? And what makes the body relaxed? What tenses it up? A lot of times it's being concerned what other people think about you. How you look, how you present, not wanting to disturb or offend anybody. Your eyes close, you're not offending anybody. And how at ease, how relaxed is the body? It makes it feel healthier. And how at ease is your mind? Your emotional world, having put down those bags of past or future, you feel free, I'd be on holiday. No one examining you, judging you. You just are. So now, please, and just smile. When you're ready, open your eyes to end the meditation. Is that okay? Sometimes it some works, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Just like me. Very good. Have you ever actually noticed that sometimes even kindness can make inanimate things work? I used to have this cement mixer. Sometimes it's so old, no one else could make it work. I always could. I'd actually just stroke it. We really need some cement mix today. Would you mind? It would work. So often that you have any other machine which works, even your computer. Nice computer. Would you mind just making sure that you don't crash today? Do you believe that that's possible? I've seen it too often to sort of doubt it. And of course, the best, most amazing story about that was of the German young man who spent a year doing some meditation practice and mindfulness and kindness practice over in Perth, Australia. He went back to Frankfurt University to do some studies, being a student, really poor. And the first day on campus, he walked past the ATM machine. And he said it made a sound, a gurgling sound. And he interpreted, perceived that as a machine welcoming him onto campus. So every day he would actually give kindness to the machine. Machine, may no one ever hit you. May no one ever get upset at you when they find their balance is zero. May you never run out of banknotes. May always your electricity supply always be sufficient, and may you never be ripped out of the wall by thieves. He was kind. Do you think he was crazy? Many people would, but the payback came, and he swore to me this happened. He was sitting by the machine at lunchtime having a few sandwiches. No one had been close to the machine for about 15 or 20 minutes. He was there, he saw that. And then he heard for the second time in his experience the same gurgling sound again. The one which he first recognized when he first went onto campus. So he turned around, and not only did he hear the sound, he actually saw a 20 euro note come out from the machine. And no one had pressed any codes or anything. And it just came out. And he took that as just a payback from he was kind to the machine, so the machine was kind to him. But it's true, sometimes if you want to get even things to work, cars, Okay, I like stories because they're real. But kindness actually works. These young people had a youth group. And one evening, I was just coming back from another appointment, going off, you know, young 18, 19, 20-year-olds. We're going to go off to the beach. But unfortunately, the boot of their car was jammed and they could not open it. And one of them, they saw me coming, said, "Who is Ajahn Brahm? We're sure he's got psychic powers. Ajahn Brahm, can you open the boot for us?" And I told this girl, the one who asked me, said, "On one condition, that you ordain as a Buddhist nun." You know what she said? "Yeah, okay." Without thinking twice, she never thought I could do it. So, and the car opened. I said, "You have to become a bhikkhuni now, a nun." She was really... But all her friends heard that. But fortunately, one of her friends was a lawyer. And the lawyer said, "Well, yes, she has to become a nun, but she never said in which lifetime." So she got offered a loophole. This is what sometimes is amazing. Sometimes with the power of kindness, just on inanimate things. So how can kindness help your body? If it can actually get stuff out of a ATM machine, open car boots, what can that do to your body? Huge things. Be kind to it. What can it do to your past? Soften it. So your past is not such a heavy weight anymore, not such a burden, which stops you literally dancing in the present moment. And your future? Be kind to it. Don't know what's going to happen. No one does. But I'm kind to it. Which means it's more likely not to bite you. So, a couple of questions, comments, complaints about behavioral health. It's all about behavior. Saying even earlier that life is not just about me or about you. It's not about stuff. It's always in, not about you and your past. It's about the relationship between you and your past. How you deal with stuff. Behavioral health. I never take any selfies anymore. Always weefies. Weefies, we, us. So even your past and you, are you friends? Are you the best of friends or are you enemies? If you're enemies, you'll always be in conflict with your past, no matter what it is. Have you ever heard that old saying, if you can't beat them, join them? Can you beat down your past? Pretend it didn't exist? Sometimes trying to obliterate it from your memory? You can't beat it, join it. On this particular subject, I don't know if I mentioned this last year about some of the wonderful successes in not trying to get rid of your past, but embracing it, bringing it in. This was many of the stories and anecdotes which I got in their raw form from Ajahn Chah, developed them, made them bigger, shared them, and they've gone out further and further and further in our world. And I'm really surprised at what happens to a simple story like opening the door of your heart. Because this I've seen working so powerfully with people who have been tortured and traumatized. This is those refugees, mostly, who come into a country like Australia or Hong Kong, who have been through some of the darkest places in our world, tortured, raped, beaten, treated just worse than, please excuse me, cockroaches. They're human beings with their past, their present, their future, their hearts, but it's all destroyed. And they come over to a place like Australia or Europe or Hong Kong. Their bodies are free, but their minds, their hearts, their emotions are still being abused. Every time they try and remember, or they remember this, and they try to suppress it, pretend it didn't happen, but there's no escape. But one thing which happened, which is one of the reasons why I see the power in being kind to your past, was they developed a little exercise for people who come to Australia who had been through the torture and trauma, was still emotionally in their prison cells. Physically they were free, but emotionally, flashbacks, traumas, waking up in the middle of the night, remembering everything. What worked was being kind to that past. You ask how that can be done. You shocked me. I never thought that this could be taken to such a level. First of all, you may have heard me say you have to be safe, first of all, before you deal with any of the problems of the past. Fill you with people who can care for you, know what they're doing, who can protect you, with friends. In an environment where you can leave at any time if you feel you need to. So having established safety and kindness and care from others, then to sit down where you feel comfortable, when you feel you're strong enough to do this. You sit down, close your eyes, keep them open if you wish, but closing your eyes is better. Then you imagine a heart in your chest. Not a real heart like you see in some jar in a medical hospital. That doesn't work, it's just too ugly and too many tubes all over the place. But the heart you see in a Valentine's Day card. Simple. The point at the bottom, you know, just with a little cleavage at the top. And in that heart, you imagine, then you imagine, welcome, thank you. In that heart, you imagine a double door. Open the door of your heart. Imagine that door opening. And from that door, a staircase coming down. Just like you used to see on those old aircraft. They come down. Because on the bottom, you see all these parts of you. The ones which hurt so much even to think about. The times when your hopes were just obliterated. Your trust in other human beings was utterly destroyed. The pain and the hurt with no one else to look after you. Just being brutally raped. Why? Beaten. And sometimes you see all those little yous. People can remember the little boy, the young girl who trusted and was treated just so badly. And the person watching all of this from up the top is that part of you which you are quite at ease with. The good part of you, the happy part of you, the healthy part of you. The part of you which lives in the sun, in the warmth. That's up there. But down there is these other people. You can remember who they are. And there'll never be any freedom until you allow those people to come up and join you at the top of the staircase in your heart. They are part of you. They're who you are. Why? You never understand. But what you can say to these little beings, little girls, boys, babies even, young men, young women, naive, hopeful, vulnerable, come up, come into my heart. And people say that sometimes they just can't do it. Okay, another time. But one day they have to. Now imagine all these little youths coming up the staircase, trembling, afraid, not knowing how they'll be treated. They've been stigmatized, left outside, just for so many years. And when they come up and you embrace a part of you you're at ease with, you like, you can deal with, and this part which was so hard, you embrace, come inside. The door of my heart is open to my whole history, even the stuff which I don't want to tell anybody about, which I want to forget about. I want to drive so deeply back, you know, under the ground, so I never need to face it anymore. Do the opposite, come in. When you do come in, the catharsis happens. You're me, you're who I am. Come in. And it's the rejection, the fear, the stigma, all of that, the guilt, the revenge, all of that evaporates, goes. One by one, all these parts of you which have been repressed, hidden, come inside. The door of my heart's open to all of that. And the people who have done that have seen these heroes and heroines. Not only are they such amazing, amazing women and men, but the anecdote was that once one of them was telling this other young man about her history, what had happened to her in the past, disgusting stuff. And the young man, in his naivety, spoke back and said, "That's terrible what happened to you." At which she scolded him. "What do you mean, terrible? Stop stigmatizing this. This is what happened. This is who I am. And I'll never ever allow people to diminish me again because of that." It was an amazing just person who'd taken all that stuff in. Really bad traumas. She'd been kind to her past in a huge way. My goodness, she was free. So that's actually how far it can go. Traumas, torture, bad memories, which we try and get rid of. We try and get justice. I don't know, but justice just hides a thing deeper and deeper and deeper under the ground. Justice, if you like, will come later. But at the moment, just to letting go of the past by being kind to it. That's how we get closure, by getting openness. Anyway, that's just some of the stuff which amazes me sometimes. And seeing the results. Ooh, it's big stuff. When you see some of the stuff which has happened, I don't know, sometimes it puts in perspective some of the stuff which happened to us, but it doesn't matter. What's happened to you is real. It had to be free. Be kind. That's for the future. Ooh, I don't ever know what's going to happen next. So much stuff happens which is unexpected. Sometimes I get blamed for it. Like the gentleman from, I think it was from Taiwan, I think he had some relations in Hong Kong who came over as well. He was dying in the ICU in a coma, and that's why they asked Buddhist monk to come along to do some chanting. So I went there to the ICU did some chanting for him. He was unconscious, in a coma, in the bed. And I got some really tough chanting. Oh, I can really zap people with my chanting. Sometimes it works, but the problem was that this time it worked. It really worked more than I expected. The fellow came out of coma and recovered. Oh, yeah. Totally unexpected. And that is where I got into big trouble. They'd already arranged a funeral, which is why all the relations had come over, some from Hong Kong, Singapore, Taiwan, I don't know where else from. And they they scolded me. They said, Bob, because of you, we've taken time off work, taken time off our businesses, come at a moment's notice to be with our patriarch of our family as he was dying, and now we've all got to go home, cancel the funeral at big expense. We have to come over probably in about 6 months or a year when he dies next time, but next time we're not going to invite you. So I learned from that. What I learned from that, from my mistakes, is when anybody asks for any blessings or chanting, I always now ask them what type of chanting they want. Well, they say, get better or die quickly. So please let me know. Otherwise, it's not my fault. And that's a true story. I didn't make that up. So anyway, about the meditation, the mindfulness, just like any other therapy which is treated here or treated, which is given here or anywhere in the world, every therapy, every meditation, every mindfulness teaching, whatever it is, always should be just tailored to you. It's never ever one size fits all. Which is one of the reasons why people do some mindfulness and say, it doesn't work. Mindfulness, meditation, letting go, peacefulness, kindness always works. Somehow or other, it's just not being tailored exactly for your situation. Just like every other therapies, which is why it's great to have a personal contact with someone like, where she is, Venus over there, or with a group over here. If the main stuff doesn't work, find out and tailor it for this way, that way, until you find exactly just how you need to reconcile with that past. And you do find, once you reconcile with the past, especially if the past has been really difficult, you're fearless for the future. As you dealt with the past is only a reflection of the future in the mirror of time. That sounds good for bags, one of those shopping bags sayings. The future is only a reflection of the past in the mirror of time. So anyway, probably somebody else has said that before. But as it is, that if you are very good with your past, you can let it go with kindness. I don't mean just so it doesn't exist anymore, but so it's not hard anymore. It's inside of you rather than outside. Then you'll find your future. It's very easy. You look at it the same way. And then Venus will be out of a job. Me too. But I'm sure they'll have many more clients. Okay, how are we going? We're going to go on for a little bit longer. Where's Gerald? Yeah, we can go on for a little bit longer. Do you want to ask any questions? Or? Right to you. But in your work in the past year, what are the sorts of questions and problems which have come up with meditation, behavioral health?
I think in Hong Kong we have a very...
Happens to you as well. Be kind. Come on, no, that's kind.
Interesting situation in Hong Kong. Actually, the meditation is very much coming from a lot from the Eastern tradition. But I notice in Hong Kong, sometimes we actually have a little bit of I don't know how to say, maybe a dilemma. We want to learn, we want to embrace, but somehow there's a little part that we may not want to take it fully. So that's a share the same feeling about when you're learning meditation. Sometimes when we're offering a teaching to the younger generation, for the young people in this university, and I just encounter the case that some students actually, they have to write their email and say, I don't want to learn meditation, so I don't want to come for the class. So situations like that.
Yeah. Again, a lot of times it is the marketing. Yeah. Because, you know, the person who started all this mindfulness business, that was, you know, Jon Kabat-Zinn. And the only reason why he called it mindfulness, MBRT, no, MBR, yeah. So the only reason why he did that, because there was the same resistance in the hospitals where he worked. So he gave it another name, and then people could accept it. Meditation can be seen as being too religious and threatening sometimes. But if it is just called mindfulness or kindfulness or anything which is more neutral, it does tend to be more acceptable. But in the same way that we, there's so much which traditions can offer to enhance that mindfulness and kindfulness which we've already begun. And sometimes you wonder, should there ever be a copyright on health? It should be given out for free. So I know that sometimes people like, you know, giving donations and stuff, but that should never be seen as an act of gratitude. This is one of Ajahn Chah's stories. He told me that when you realize that your teachers help you so much, you want to do something back, some kindness, say thank you, can I look after you, can I help you, what can I do to pay back my debt? And he would tell me, he said, you cannot pay off your debt by thanking me or serving me or whatever. The only way you can pay off your debt to a teacher is going out there and sharing the same things which helped you. And if somebody, you've helped somebody else, really served them, been kind to them, and they come and say, thank you so much. I said, no, don't thank me. Otherwise, the transaction is finished. Now you have to go and help somebody else and care for someone else and share it with someone else. And then afterwards, when they say thank you to you, say, no, no, no. You have to go now and help somebody else and share, you know, the great wonders of mindfulness and kindness and the wisdom which comes from it with as many people as you can when they want to.
I think that's the very precious part of the teaching, and I'm sure many of our friends here also share the same feeling. Sometimes we learn and then we know how to take better care of our life, and then we want to spread it out, or because we know how good it is to help others. So it's very important. So I think we still have around like 10 minutes before we go for the lunch break. Any friends here would like to have any questions? Yes.
Hello. Hi, Ajahn Chah. I, like many people here today, am vegetarian. And when I think of the terrible things that are done to the animals on this planet, it fills me with great sadness and futility. So my question for you is, how do you keep this in mind, yet at the same time not let it depress you and ruin your day?
Okay. It is learning how to lessen your impact on the world without totally ever being able to eradicate it. Sometimes that we look for a heaven on earth, but this place is not a heaven. In fact, it's where we learn. We learn, people will argue with one another. First of all, I thought especially people in families arguing with one another, which is so hard to bear. Especially when I saw my mother arguing with my father and vice versa. But then I saw this wonderful reconciliation afterwards, because it was a small apartment, that they couldn't escape from one another, and they couldn't escape from their kids. So soon I saw them reconciling together. When I saw them reconciling, it was such a beautiful thing to see your mother and father reconciling, that I even looked forward to the arguments, because I knew what was going to happen next. It was a sense of having a bigger picture of life. People do harm on one another. Sometimes why they do that? Needs-based? Stupidity-based? I don't know. But be kind to your past. Kind to other people's past. Kind to the animals. But sometimes animals eat one another. Is that their nature? I think I said earlier, sometimes people say it's your nature. That's what I said in a little interview this morning. Nature is not always right. Just say, oh, it's nature. But sometimes we restrain as much as we can. We never get to perfection there. So for you, whatever you've done in your life, to animals, to friends, to others, to your parents, whatever. Remember just to be kind. Admit it all. Bring it into your heart. Let it grow. See what comes out next. But feeling guilty, feeling negative, neither helps yourself, your friends, or any animals either. Be kind. Have you heard the vegan joke? You know what tofu is? Tofu. Why did the tofu cross the road? To prove it wasn't chicken. That's a vegan joke.
So we still have some time. We can.
Okay. Okay. Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Ajahn Brahm. I've got a question about when we have thoughts coming in meditation. So you said in that case, just be kind to it. But for how long? Because then we can stay for a long time.
No, only just for one moment.
So I have a thought, I recognize it, I'm kind to it, and?
Then if another thought comes, recognize it, be kind to it.
Okay, thank you.
In other words, sometimes we have this perception of how long, and that means you've already lost your mindfulness. So we're just here, this one thought, one moment. Be kind to it now. Take away this whole idea of how long. I'll take that up in the afternoon session with one of the great little ways of meditation, which is, again, totally unreligious. It was from the Leo Tolstoy story, The Emperor's Three Questions, and it becomes The Emperor's Three Questions way of meditation. Highly effective. So that's coming after lunch. Something not to look forward to because you're supposed to be in the present moment. Okay, thank you so much.
So thank you, Ajahn, for the morning teaching. So just maybe now let's invite all friends to stand up. And then we will see Ajahn in the afternoon for the afternoon session. Thank you. Bye. So, okay. So please be seated for just a couple of minutes. We'll have some. All right, so the announcement about the upcoming plans and programs. So we will have the lunchbox coming, but not here yet. So please continue the practice of meditation. Today is a day of mindfulness and kindfulness. So even though sometimes we are always in a hurry, so when there's a break, it's like, okay, cell phone and everything. So try to allow yourself while you're here, observe your practice. Take the day is for you to take better care of yourself. So now we'll have a break. Maybe you can go for a walk and then go to bathroom. And the bathroom, I forgot to mention, sorry about that. Actually, apart from this floor, on the ground floor, fourth floor, and eighth floor, we also have some bathroom accessible without the SS card. So if you notice it's too crowded on this floor, on the second floor, you can go to other floors if you don't mind. And then later on, I think probably around 11:30 to 40, we'll have the lunchbox ready. So you can get the lunchbox, enjoy your meal in silence, and then you can come back to eat. But please be kind to our carpet as well, so because this is the learning space and the practice space. So be kind with the use of this facility, and take care. If you need any help, just let us know. And then, or in case you want to eat outdoor, actually there are some other floors which I'm not sure if I'm supposed to make this announcement, because this show, even we shouldn't go to other floors to use the tables, but I think it's fine. So in case you want to find a seat outdoor, you can try to go and have the access to other floors. And also the eighth floor, we have a very nice roof garden, which you can see the very beautiful scene of the western side of the island. So you can enjoy your time, maybe do some mindful walking as well. And then Ajahn will be back around 1:30, but by that time the program is not started yet. Officially, the afternoon session will resume at 2 p.m. So why we have this time arrangement is we want everybody to come back and really settle down, to be ready to receive the teaching, as well as to be ready to join the meditation session. So do come back. If you want to go further away for some walk, it's okay, but do make sure you will come back at 1:30. For the preparation of the second session for today's program. And then this room, we will not lock the door. So in case you want to come back, just maybe do your own meditation, is perfectly okay, perfectly welcome. But just to make sure when you leave this room or go anywhere for today, make sure all your personal belongings, your valuable items are with you. But you can keep your seat, like you can leave your water bottles or jacket here, it's fine. All right, so thank you very much. Outside we have the book counter ready, so if you want to check out the books, now it will be a good time. Thank you so much.
off the warming up first. And the other ones said, not warm enough. And also we need lots of water, lots of boiling water, really lots and lots of boiling water. So people were running around, boiling the water and digging the hole, boiling the water, until the villagers brought this woman. I mean, she was one of the most possessed. Her eyes were bulging out of her head and foaming at the mouth. I mean, really, and people with such strong psychoses are just so hard to hold down. And I never knew what Ajahn Chah was going to do. What's this to do with boiling water and digging a big hole? And then only when she was right in front of him, just writhing around, did Ajahn Chah say, we need this hole dug deeper, we need more boiling water, because the only way we can get rid of this very dangerous spirit inside her body is to put her in the hole, pour boiling water all over the spirit, and then bury her. Could you do that therapy in Hong Kong, you hospital? No, I don't think, but anyway, psychologically, it was amazing. Because what happened, you know, no one knew, not even me, if Ajahn Chah would actually do that. Because, you know, monks were just, you know, they wouldn't be prosecuted or anything. So, would he do it, would he not? He never needed to, because as soon as that woman heard that she was going to be buried alive with hot boiling water poured over her, it's amazing just how quickly she stopped screaming and writhing around. It was something we call self-preservation, which overcame everything else inside of her. And only an Ajahn Chah could do that. Don't you try it. You will go to hospital. But within 5 minutes, she had calmed down. And exhausted, the villagers took her back to her village to rest. And that's what living with Ajahn Chah was. How he could dare to do that, and how he was confident it would work. That was a unique form of clinical psychiatric therapy, which I've never seen repeated. But what it did do, it tapped in to a person's wanting to get better because they really needed to. The fear, or rather the wanting to be preserved, wanting to avoid pain. It's a very powerful psychological force inside of every human being. If you have to, it's amazing the sorts of resources you can draw up. And so today, are we going to introduce our MC for the day, Venus, who will then introduce me. Thank you, Venus.
Thank you, Ajahn. Thank you, Ajahn, for your kindness. I thought the warming up part should be my duty. But anyway, on behalf of the Center on Behavioral Health, welcome all of you to be here today. I'm Venus, working here in the center. And every year, we're very much looking forward to the visiting of Ajahn. Usually, it's the first stop for his Hong Kong tour. So just in case, I assume many of us know Ajahn already. But just in case, if some of you are new friends coming to join the teaching with Ajahn. So let me just spend a couple of minutes to have a brief introduction about Ajahn's background. So Ajahn was born to a working class family in London in 1951. He received a full scholarship in Cambridge University, where he graduated with a first class honor in theoretical physics. After teaching in high school for 1 year, he traveled to Thailand and became a monk. As a disciple of the late eminent master of the Thai forest tradition, Ajahn Chah, which Ajahn just mentioned, he lived in the forest in the northern Thailand for 9 years before being invited to Perth, Australia, to build a monastery where he has been residing since. So the base in Australia. And then after fully ordained in Theravada Buddhist monk for over 40 years, now Ajahn is a highly sought after teacher who has been an invited speaker at the United Nations, Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, as well as other very famous universities like Oxford and Cambridge. Among other multinational organizations, he has also authored numerous international bestsellers, which have been translated into more than 20 languages, including Opening the Door of Your Heart, Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond, The Art of Disappearing, Good, Bad, Who Knows, Kindfulness, Bare Awareness, Happiness Through Meditation, Simply This Moment, and The Wisdom Born of Stillness. So a lot of these books will be available later on in the book counter, which the bookstore will have some copies. So please feel free to go and check out the books. And also, if you go out, there is a counter selling the canvas bag. I have one. I got one from last year. It's a very good bag, I have to say. So doing a little bit of advertisement. So apart from that, this year, the tour, there are different visits to different organizations. So if you want to know more about the upcoming activities in Hong Kong U and also in other places, so please go and visit and check out this poster. And also you can find the Facebook page. Please like the page and stay tuned with Ajahn's teaching tour. And then I just noticed from the organizing team, this time Ajahn got a new publication. It's in Chinese, a very cute cartoon book, which is, they describe it as a good read for children as well as for adults. We all have the inner child inside, so we need some good readings to nourish our body and mind, maybe. So go out and check out this copy, which will be available later on outside. So I think that's all for, by the way, just some points about the procedure. So today, the flow, we'll have the teaching and some practices led by Ajahn. And then we'll have the lunch time. We'll have the announcement about the lunch arrangement, which is included in the program. And usually we'll stay around this building area, some areas that you can feel comfortable and have your meal. But today, there might be some light shower outside, so maybe not so good to go out. We'll see. And then the bathroom is by the very far end of this corridor, so just feel free to go. But while the teaching is in progress, try to keep quiet if you really have to go out. I think that's the courtesy to respect the space for everybody for the learning. And I think, so in case you have any questions about today's program, the space, or any facilities that you want to check out, you can talk to me or ask our team members outside. So thank you very much. And then without further ado, I think my part is the real warm-up, and then please join me and have a very respectful welcome to Ajahn Brahm. Thank you.
Excellent. So now you can relax to the max. Because most of these occasions, I was asked to do some guided meditations and just learning how to get people to experience some peace and relaxation and some stillness, and some happiness, and some good health, which is amazing what everybody can do if they learn how to relax to the max. Can you do that? No, you can't. People think they can relax, but later on, we'll be encouraging you, guiding you to see how you can learn how to relax in your body, in your mind, in your emotional world, and get this